Hi, everyone. I'm Debbie Statler, Editor-in-Chief of Provider Magazine, the flagship publication of the American Healthcare Association and the National Center for Assisted Living. I'd like to welcome you to this episode of Perspectives in Long-Term Care, a monthly podcast produced by AHCA and NCAL. Each month, we'll talk with long-term care and assisted living professionals about the opportunities and challenges impacting the long-term and post-acute care profession. My guest today is Tipa Snow. Welcome, Tipa.
Hey, it's good to be with you.
Tipa is an occupational therapist with over 40 years of clinical and academic experience. Her experiences led her to develop the GEMS, States of Brain Change, and the Positive Approach training strategies. Her company, Positive Approach to Care, provides online and in-person education and products to support those living with brain change. Tipa, let's start at the beginning. Tell us how you began your career in long-term care and got into dementia care.
In the very beginning, I was a young teenager, and there was a cinder block nursing home in Pennsylvania, and my grandfather was developing dementia. And they said, this was back when I was 16, 17 years old, that if I was willing to come and do some work at the facility, then they would probably be able to find a bed for him. This was a long time ago. We're talking 55 years ago. So I went in, and after 3 days, I was a nursing assistant because I followed somebody around and figured out how to do the tasks we were supposed to do. And my grandfather moved in. And unfortunately, he had been the care provider of my grandmother, who had rheumatoid arthritis for a long time. I worked second shift. One of my first second shift evenings on site, I hear, there's a man trying to get in my bed. And I go down the hall. Guess who it was?
Your grandfather.
So he got kicked out. I stayed and I continued to work for a bit, but that was my very first experience in long-term care. That was ages and ages ago. And then I became an occupational therapist and became interested in geriatrics in general and did a research project at a Blumenthal home in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, when I was still in my graduate program, looking at eating and feeding and diets and dependence for people living in long-term care as my thesis. And after that, I went into practice and did long-term care back in the day and have worked in a variety of settings after that and now do a whole bunch of things. So that's the background. It's like all around the clock, but that's a start. Yeah.
I find it so interesting that so many people have a family connection that starts them on their career path in long-term care. Like you mentioned, a grandparent, but it could have been a parent that worked in the industry. It's so fascinating to just hear of those connections. I'd love for us to focus our conversation on dementia care. So set the setting for us. Where have we been with dementia care and where are we now with dementia care? I know there have been some changes in the mindsets about that type of care.
When we first started recognizing, boy, people with dementia, and a lot of folks were in state facilities for psychiatric care. And we referred it as senile dementia, Alzheimer's type, or people had organic brain disease. But then we started really repurposing places and said, they can't stay in the state psych hospitals. We're going to have to find some other places. And that's when people living with dementia really became primarily located in the chronic care portions of long-term care because there wasn't a place. So what else are we going to do? They don't belong in the psych setting. What are we going to do? And so putting them in long-term care. But then it became clear, but they interfere with people who don't have dementia and their care if we just put them in general population. Boy, that's tough. And so we went through an era that was, let's isolate them and let's lock the door and let's put them in the dementia unit or the secured unit, and we'll keep everybody else out in the other area. And not realizing actually that, wow, there were a lot of people out in the other area that had some brain changes as well, but it wasn't as significant or wasn't noted. Over time, I think what we found is that people living with dementia are going to need care through the end of their life, whereas other people entering long-term care are coming in for acute episodes of recovery or acute episodes of chronic illnesses, or they do have chronic illnesses, but they can recover. Rehab was really not for people living with dementia. Good heavens, what are you going to do with them? But we were developing programs. What can we do that keeps them, people living with dementia, from causing so much trouble? How do we satisfy them? What do we do? And I think we are still in that space. As much as we would love to be in a different space, the reality is we're still struggling with what do we do in long-term care with people living with dementia who were cared for by families at home on a one-on-one basis, and now we're placing them in care where we may have a 6-to-1, an 8-to-1, a 10-to-1 ratio. They may be in assisted living, but oh boy, are they needing to transition to something more? But what would that be? Because they don't have medical illnesses. It's really complex. And I think if anything, it's getting more complicated, not less, as we discover more about dementia.
I guess that means that we'll be hearing more about this for quite a while to come. I think it's interesting that you mention it as a spectrum, as folks develop dementia, and then it becomes a progression in certain ways and things like that. So you're not just dealing with someone who has or doesn't have dementia. It's like the scale of it and how much intervention and support and things like that they need. I think that's such an important distinction.
It's a huge distinction, as is the type or forms of dementia they might be living with, because the kind of support and care I need for something like Alzheimer's or vascular is vastly different from what I might need with Lewy body dementia, or what I might need with a frontal temporal type dementia, or somebody who has a Creutzfeldt-Jakob. And the reality is we require almost zero education about different forms of dementia. People say dementia, and everyone thinks Alzheimer's, memory problems, and we even call them things like memory areas. And the problem is, it's not just about memory. It's about sequencing. It's about decision-making. It's about ability to stand and move safely. It's about the ability to recognize objects and what food is food and that's not food. And how do you do things that you've always done? And who are these people? And what am I going to do next? And it's really complicated. And we spend so little time preparing people for the care. And we're talking about families, not just staff. I'm talking about family members as well, not really understanding what's going on for people. And so we end up having crises with each other or disagreements with each other because we're trying to figure things out, but we don't prepare people very well as a society, not just as a facility care thing. It's a society. We're so scared of this thing called dementia that everybody backs off rather than step forward and say, tell me more about it so I can learn about it.
That leads directly into my next question. It is a complicated issue with a lot of nuances and things to know. What do people, maybe family members, maybe even professional healthcare providers, caregivers, what do they not understand about dementia? What are some common misconceptions you find yourself correcting?
So everybody talks about loss. And what I'd say is we need to talk about change. Because yes, people lose capacities, but it's not like there's an empty void there. What happens is they use what they have left. So if I can't hold on to new data very well, I have a hard time holding on to what you just told me. What am I going to do? I'm going to ask a question. So if you say my appointment's at 2 o'clock and I can't hold on to it, and I'm wondering, what time is my appointment? I have one today, I think. Excuse me, what time is my appointment? And you're going to again say,
your appointment's at 2 o'clock.
Oh, I wish you'd said something. And without thinking, and this is the problem, if you aren't trained to realize, okay, she's using what she has, which is the ability to ask a question. What she can't do is hold on to the answer you gave her. So if you don't do something different, you're in a cycle that's not going to break, except you will. And so what I want to do is next time you say your appointment's at 2, oh, hey, Tipa, I could use your help. Because as soon as you do that, we've interrupted this, and I'd call it an interjection. What we've done is we've created a new opportunity for a new direction of travel. And that's actually using what I have left. Could you help me? Sure. What do you need? I have no idea what you're going to ask me for. I don't know that, but I like to be helpful. I like to have purpose. So now as a helper, we have a new thing that we can do. could you get these things sorted? There's red ones and there's white ones. Can you get all those cards sorted out for me?
Sure, I can do that.
And you give me something that we know I can do. What happens for you when I'm occupied? What happens for me when I'm occupied? What happened to the repeated questions? But that only works if you appreciate what I still have as well as what I don't have anymore. And that's what we don't do for people. We don't help them understand dementia and how it changes things. And we continue to believe, oh, they're just gone. They'll be missing. So, oh, she's right there. Trust me, she will come forward. But the dementia is impacting how she appears and what she says and why she says it. The more about that, the better you can support yourself and her so that we're not getting into situations of distress.
That's so fascinating. I think as a society, we do view aging, especially as you get into the more advanced stages of aging, as this stages of loss. Yes. Of all the things you could do, you were doing, you things in the past, instead of having this more positive mindset of focusing on the things that you still do, can do, enjoy doing. You're still a person. You're still somebody there who wants to do something with their time and things of that sort. So I think that's such an important way to frame it for folks, that it's not just loss and mm-hmm. things like that, but change and still positive time.
Yeah. And the reality is, if you don't figure that out, pretty soon we both get negative. Because I'll say to you, no, I don't, no, not right now. No, that's enough. And if you don't know to say, that's enough, not right now. Hey, Tipa. And I go, what? And you go, I could use your help. What do you want? Come with me. I want to show you something and see if you can help me with that. Mm-hmm. Now, what I'm doing is relationship repair. Because if I don't get your brain, the primitive part of your brain, to see me as a positive thing in your life, then the next time I walk in the space, there is a possibility and maybe even a probability. What happens is you remember you don't like me. You don't remember why. You don't remember what happened. But all of a sudden, you're already, I said, no, get out. And it's now I've just made my job harder. I've just made my visit unhappy. And we have simple ways that we can modify, but we have to realize that we're the source and we're the therapeutic agent. There's not going to be some magic sprinkle dust that we put on people that makes it all go away. It's got to be us changing what we do as well, because they're changing.
Absolutely. Which is a great opportunity and not something to be scared away from. Talking about just the different levels of dementia, the different types of dementia, and then combine that with each person and their individual chronic illnesses and progression and all of those things. It's so specialized. And I know that person-centered care in long-term care is absolutely the way that we're operating right now. It seems like person-centered care and dementia care right now should just go hand in hand. Is that really where we're at with dementia care? Is this person-centered care as a philosophy?
I believe in it, but I also know that people will, on the other side of the fence, say they're not even there anymore. It's, oh, they're very present. And so when you see someone screaming at you, that person is very present and they don't give you permission to do what you're doing. So if we're talking person-centered, if we keep the person in the center, we can actually get ourselves to really go, okay, that didn't go well. What can we do differently to support this person? Versus they have dementia, they don't know what's going on. It's, I'd say from their reaction, they did and they didn't like it. So if I say to you, no, and you go, no, you don't want me doing that, and I give you the right support and I say, hey, Deborah, would you rather stay here or go down the hall? What have I just given you?
An opportunity to say something different.
Oh, and a chance to be in charge?
Oh, yes. That's true. Oh,
and so now you have control. And before you were screaming no because I was trying to take control. And what I realized is, oh, you need to be in control of you. You're not a connector. You're a controller. you're someone who likes to be in control versus, oh, please come here. Please, please come here, lady. Please, please. There, I've got a connector that's not getting your needs met. In these different situations, I've got to see the person first, and they're living with their dementia. They are not their dementia. The more we can help people appreciate, okay, what works for her? Nothing. And so I find that hard to believe. But it means I have to step away from my pre-program and say, it's not about the agenda. It's about the human being first. I've got to take my agenda, stick it in my back pocket, and see what her agenda is. And then we can get to my agenda if I build the relationship. But I don't think we prepare staff or families to recognize my agenda is not her agenda, and what I get is resistance. And if I'd like to quit getting resistance, quit pushing the agenda. Start focusing on the person first.
That's a relationship skill I think we can all learn.
Yeah. It's only when you realize, oh, wait, I'm pushing. Okay, let me quit pushing. And it's, oh, they quit pushing back. Oh, imagine that.
Yeah, exactly. All of these things that you're saying seem to make total sense and would be available to be implemented in a short amount of time. But it's all relying on communication and these communication habits that we have. So how do you do that? How do you teach these new communication skills, these new communication habits, mindsets, so that people are going into these situations without their agenda at the top of their mind, with focusing on the person and the things that they might need?
Yeah, my experience after 40 plus years is experiential. I have to have you experience something with me. And so I teach classes where we pair people up and we say, okay, now, look at the person straight, stand right in front of them. Make sure you're making eye contact, smile at them. And then they're going to put on O's around their eyes. And you're going to say, so I'm going to have a hand right now. Hey, yeah. And I nod and I smile. I say, oh, hey. And invariably the person says, okay. And then I reach out to your waistband and there's this sudden jerk where you're like, what are you doing? It's, oh, you couldn't see my hands coming. Oh, and you didn't understand what I said. When you say to someone with moderate dementia, are you ready to take your shower? I'm going to help you get your clothes off. And you're standing right in front of them and they think you're having a chit-chat conversation. And they say, you say, okay. And they go, okay. And then you reach and they startle. Huh, let's try something different. And I turn to the side and I say, oh, Debbie. And I know, what, huh? And I'm gesturing with my body to the side that we're going to wash your armpits. And I give you a thumbs up or thumbs down. And you go, oh, I'm fine right now. Oh, you got. And I'm gesturing now to the edge of your mouth. And I hold up a damp, warm cloth. I say, here, get right there. Oh, we're starting the process, but we're doing it in a very different way. And I believe unless we start helping people shift habits by first recognizing what you do as a habit, and that habit is getting in our way of care, let's do something different, because simply saying don't do that just creates a void. So I've got to create the new behavior and then rehearse it and practice and reinforce it and coach it.
I could not support experiential any more strongly than I do. I think that is such a critical method of learning. This experiential training, I can see that would be great for staff and professional caregivers. But how do you reach other stakeholders? What about family members? What's the role of the community or other sort of groups that might have contact with folks with dementia? How do you get that education and training out to those folks that may not be taking a formal course?
Yeah. And so one of the things I encourage people to do is to do lunch and learns, evening programs, where we have short video clips of simulations. And we say, this one, option A or option B. And there's something like 30-second videos. And they go, oh, boy, that was really different. And it's like, yeah. So here's how it happens. And that's the experience they have. It's not necessarily a physical experience, but it's a visual experience and an auditory experience that helps them start to think, that sounds a lot like my mom. And it does. or that sounds like the lady we would just did an EMS call on. And that's exactly what she sounded like. And it's, so have you trained your officers to do something different? Oh, hadn't thought of that. Or do a cafe scene where somebody says, those tattoos make you look horrible. And then the person slides a companion card across the table and says, my companion is living with brain change. We're sorry in advance for anything that might occur that might be distressing or embarrassing. For more information on brain changes, come to our website.
I love those, the little nudges, little bite-sized pieces, little videos that people can engage with. Because like you mentioned, there's so many situations, whether it is having coffee in a cafe or a longer, more involved interaction, that really these techniques and communication skills could come up all the time.
Yeah, because dementia is not just living in a long-term care facility. It's everywhere. And when we fail in community, that's when we start really wanting residential care. But if we failed in community, the risk of failing in long-term care is quite high. And then we're talking about trying to subdue or trying to manage people rather than engage people. And it's because we weren't real successful in community either.
In your experience giving these training and learning to long-term care staff, is this mostly something that sort of the frontline direct carers should do? Is this something everyone should do? I'm thinking, what about the folks that bring in the lunch trays or plan the activity, things of that sort?
The executive directors need a little more, what do we do? Because the reality is the spouse of the person who's in the building for renal disease might very well also be living with dementia. Even though she's more functional, the reality is the reason she couldn't keep him at home wasn't just his renal disease. I truly believe everyone that's going to make contact should get a little bit, at least, awareness and knowledge on how to interact and how to respond. Because if it's not somebody at work, it's somebody in your life. I have yet to meet anyone who hasn't had some brush with the brain changes that come with dementia, even if it's a neighbor or somebody's aunt or somebody with so-and-so that I know. It's getting closer and closer. And at any moment in time, we're suspecting somewhere around 2 out of 5 families are dealing with some sort of dementia. Close up, might be family, might be friend, but within the next few years, it's going to be 3 out of 5. So it's going to be a majority of us at any moment in time will be trying to figure out some brain change stuff. And we don't have the facilities for everyone. But I would say whether I work in the laundry, because you're stealing my stuff. I was just bringing you back your laundry. That's not mine. Get it out of here. Can be really surprising for staff who are just trying to put the laundry away. Or housekeeping or maintenance, where I'm trying to take the thing off the wall because the air conditioning is too cold. Or I'm out on the grounds trying to dig holes because I'm planting flowers, but I'm not. So I truly believe we should have basic training for everyone, because you never know when you will need to be able to respond.
Absolutely. And I love that you brought up the community aspect, because you're right. It doesn't just stop at the door of the long-term care facility. What would you recommend for folks that are more family, friends, community members? What's the first step they can take to begin this journey of learning?
Yeah, the first is to realize that dementia is a possibility. And so being prepared ahead of time, if you never need it, it won't hurt you to have a little bit of awareness and knowledge. But if you end up needing it and you're already in a situation where you're 5 years in and you didn't even know what you were living with was dementia, you have a big hole to dig out of. And unfortunately, right now, estimated around 80% of people living with dementia will not be identified, even by medical providers, until about 5 to 8 years into their active disease state. They're in mid-state by the time we're recognizing it. So we've actually been trying to cope with it, deal with it, think it's just aging. She's not paying attention anymore. That people just do stuff like that. They can't find words. And it's not that frequently they don't. When you can't find the word, the thing that you drive, the whatchamacallit, the locomotive, it's the other one. It starts with an A. You know what I mean? There's a short word for it. I just can't think of it. That's not typical aging. Okay, let's just be honest. There's a little more going on there than typical aging. I couldn't find car. I couldn't find automotive or automobile. I was looking for something, but I circumlocuted around the word a good bit trying to get there. And everybody says, let's distress. And it's, yeah, but it might be something else worth looking at because you might be only getting the tip of the iceberg. And now's a time when I could contribute a lot more to my decision-making and what we're going to do next than is possible later on.
It sounds like with that beginning of education and understanding, we also need a fair dose of compassion for folks. Mm. So that compassion and understanding, I'm sure, goes a long way. So you mentioned dementia in the population increasing in coming years. If we take a long look, where do you see folks with dementia and dementia care in 10, 20 years? In my mind, my brain jumps to technology, that obviously there's going to be some role for technology. But what do you see for a decade or two in the future?
We absolutely will master better technology for monitoring for a lot of things so that we can save our people, our folks that have skill, for situations where we really do need skilled intervention. We will need to, whether we want to call it ration or not, we're going to need to figure out how to position people and support people in residential, but we're also going to need to figure out home care. There is no residential program that doesn't need to figure out home support, because these transitions in and out need to get smoother and less dramatic than they are now. We are not going to be able to afford residential programming for everyone, but we also are not going to be able to provide individual home care as we currently have it, because there won't be the resources for it. This use of combining technology, skillful but limited intervention, and where we're going to put people who want to be where they've always been, how do we do this in a way that doesn't break the bank, but also doesn't break human beings? And I'm concerned that people are not really curious enough about this at this moment in time, and the numbers are fast approaching a wall of, I don't know if we don't change something. And I'm not a believer in we're going to cure this condition that fast. I think even if we find things that can help people pre-dementia, I think once people have dementia, the reality is there's not a lot we're going to keep it from doing, other than we got to figure out how to provide care until there is some sort of cure. And the cure is going to be different. We might be able to do some prevention or risk reduction long before we get to curing people. I think we better figure it out. And I'm concerned people aren't curious enough about it until it hits home. And then they're desperate, but they can't really take in a lot of data because they're desperate.
That's true. There's a lot about the aging process, not just dementia care, that folks don't want to confront or be curious about. Hopefully, your strategies and education and community outreach and things of that, we can all get a little bit more of an open mindset and a little more education on those things, so that maybe our curiosity will hopefully move us in a positive direction when it comes to dementia care. Thank you for joining us, Tipa. This was a fascinating discussion, and I know that I'm going to go learn a little bit more about dementia now, because I agree with you. I can already name at least 2 to 3 people that I have interactions with that are affected by dementia, and I need to be more educated and more compassionate. So that is my assignment for our discussion.
Mission accomplished. Change it one mind at a time. So thanks.
I love it. For more resources, visit the Provider Magazine website at providermagazine.com. You can search for articles on dementia to learn about new methods of care. ACCA and Cal Ed also has courses on dementia care. Go to educate.accancal.org and search dementia. Specifically, on the left side of the website is a link to the CARES Online Dementia Training Program. And thank you to everyone for listening to this episode of Perspectives in Long-Term Care. Join us each month as we discuss issues that impact the long-term and post-acute care profession. And be sure to listen to this podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Take care.